Welcome to the Leadership Experience Podcast, where we seek to build connections, talk relevant issues about warfighting, and share professional knowledge through experience and lessons learned with guests from a variety of different professional backgrounds. It's our way to relate to multiple generations within our formation and create real conversations as we build a team of teams committed to winning and dedicated to the pursuit of excellence. We hope you enjoy our content. You can continue to find the Lancer Brigade on Facebook and Instagram, and find our podcast content on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts as you search for the Lancer Brigade or the Leadership Experience. Enjoy. Hey team, check it out. Today we welcome Dr. Steffi Cohen. Dr. Cohen is a 25-time world record holder in powerlifting, certified personal trainer, and founder of Hybrid Performance Method. For years, Dr. Cohen has moved up and down in weight classes, competing in nearly 3 to 5 competitions a year, shattering world records. Her approach to powerlifting has consistently remained grounded in the proper balance of sleep, dieting, and physical exercise. This balance, paired with her adherence to a hybrid training method, has pushed her through crucible moments both on and off the powerlifting circuit. Her contributions today will cover both her personal and professional stories progressing to where she is today, adapting her training in a COVID environment. Hey, Dr. Cohen, thanks for taking the time to sit down and have a conversation with us today.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me as a guest.
Absolutely. I was just going to ask for the team that's listening today, you know, with all the current conditions that are going on for COVID, what have you had to adjust in terms of your own personal training regimen and what you've been doing with your clients, you know, and your athletes that you're working with?
Yeah. So as far as my personal training goes, you know, at the beginning it was quite discouraging that all the competitions were canceled, that the gyms were closing off. You know, the training atmosphere was not the same. But, you know, one of my favorite quotes of all time is, "Each fresh crisis is an opportunity in disguise." And I really hold that quote close to my heart and try to remind it to myself anytime I encounter any sort of obstacle. So at the beginning, I think you go through phases, right? At the beginning, when you encounter an obstacle, you're angry, you're upset, you don't understand why it has to happen, and you're kind of worried about how that's going to impact you in the short and the long run. But eventually, as you let go of those emotions and you start to be able to think more rationally about the situation you're in, you start seeing what some of those opportunities that were disguised in that obstacle were. So in my case, you know, it freed a lot of time for other projects. I took classes online. I taught myself how to sew. I opened up a lot more time for creative projects. And then as far as training goes, you know, I decided I'm going to enter a full-blown off season. So over the past 5 years, I've been competing anywhere from 3 to 5 times per year. And for powerlifting, for any sort of, I guess, iron or strength sport, that's pretty high volume. You know, it involves really strenuous, heavy training nonstop, pretty much. And I've definitely taken a beating over the last few years. So this kind of like gave me permission to step outside of the gym and give myself some time for myself, time to explore other areas of fitness, other sports that might interest me, and just change things up a bit. So initially I was trying to keep doing what my plan was, try to keep training at the same intensity, at the same frequency. And then eventually it was like, you know what? I don't have to do this. I really don't know when the next time I'm going to compete is. And that is not necessarily a bad thing. That's actually a good thing. For the first time in my life, I'm going to actually step away from the gym, step away from heavyweights, and give my body some time to heal, and work on other areas of fitness that I might have been neglecting over the years. So for me, it's my cardiovascular training. You know, I try to include it as much as I can into my training, but realistically speaking, definitely not doing enough. So I've been doing a lot more running, a lot more. I got into boxing. So I still keep resistance training there in the backbone. I still lift 2-3 times per week. But, you know, just having fun with it and exploring other areas. I've been loving boxing, potentially going to pick up a fight next year if I'm ready.
Oh, that's great to hear. I mean, I love the approach, and it's something that we try to share with the team. I mean, as we were going through this, we were preparing to go on several different deployments. And I think that, you know, when you have some unfortunate events that are going on and conditions change, we all do express that frustration. and we all want to say that we're open to a lot of things, but you know, you end up becoming creatures of habit and you don't see the opportunities that are disguised potentially as a blessing. And a lot of times I think that, you know, we've got an opportunity to spend a little bit more time with family and a little bit more time that, you know, to pick up a new hobby, as you've mentioned. So I appreciate you sharing that with us.
For sure. It's so easy to kind of like fall victim to whatever the setback that you're living is, right? It's easy to feel bad, but feel sorry for yourself. Oh, poor me, you know, this happened to me, whatever. But we all have a choice. You know, you have the choice of not feeling like a victim. You have the choice of doing something productive with your time. And all these people are talking about how bored they are during the pandemic. I'm like, are you serious? Are you bored? That's on you, man. Like, this is the 21st century. Information is available at your fingertips. Do something productive with your time. Learn a skill. Spend valuable time with your family. I don't know, man. You know, there's just so much to do. I don't understand the concept of boredom at all.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I have to tell you, you know, one, thanks for being an inspiration, just, you know, health, discipline, grit. And for me, you know, as somebody that is also not very tall, you know, my dad used to always tell me as I was growing up, it's not what you look like, but it's what you can do. And for those that may not be familiar with your story, you know, you definitely, when people see you just in your size and then what you can do, it's like a superpower. And so I was wondering if you can share first, I congratulate you. Cause I know, you know, I think it was in February timeframe or so you had to get added a couple more world records. But what I understand is that you've had about, you know, 20, 25 world records, but I was wondering if you could just share with the team, you know, some of the impressive things that you've done.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much. I'm blushing. Yeah, so I've been competing in powerlifting for about 5 years and about 4 consecutive years of like bringing the bar up continuously, like breaking my own record, breaking other people's records, going up in weight classes, down in weight classes, and just kind of trying to prove not only to myself but also to the industry, the sport, that I can do whatever. I can be light and pull a lot of weight. I can be heavier and squat a lot of weight. Just trying to be well-rounded. So I guess one of the first world records I broke was in the deadlift. I became the first woman to ever deadlift over 4 times her body weight. Actually got it up to about 4.5 times my body weight with a 545-pound deadlift at 120 pounds body weight. Hayden's correcting me. He's telling me that actually squat was my first world record. I didn't say first. I said one of my firsts. the reason why the deadlift one was, I guess, the one that I talk about the most is because I've been known as a deadlift specialist, and I was ready for that deadlift world record on so many different competitions, and I came short a bunch of times, like missing my 3rd deadlift attempt. So when I finally was able to get in that competition, it was kind of like monumental. It was historical for me. It had a lot of meaning. I guess like when you, there's something to be said about, what's that saying? That the steeper the mountain, the higher the mountain, the better the view, or something like that. What that cheesy saying? Whatever. I mean, you know what I mean. But there is something to be said, you know, like for me, it's more about the challenge than it is about the accomplishment, you know, and no, I complain a lot, but that is the reason why I do what I do. It's like, how hard are you pushing yourself in training? How many times do you fail? How many times do people doubt you? How many times do people tell you you don't have what it takes? How hard do you continue pushing? And then what did it take for you to be able to succeed in the end? But yeah, I got a little bit sidetracked there. But yeah, so deadlift world records, squats world records. Dexter's eating the planter. My dog is a little bit insane. Squat world record, deadlift world record, total world record. You know, over the last 3 years, female powerlifting has become extremely competitive to the point where like we're kind of, there's 3 or 4 of us that are continuously like breaking each other's record and pushing it forward, which is interesting to see. You know, there's kind of like this, as soon as someone breaks a record and like shows everyone else what females or what humans are capable of, then you all of a sudden see like all these other people able to do it. I don't know what that phenomenon is called, if it has a name, but yeah, you see, like, as soon as I deadlifted 500 pounds, there were like 10 other girls that started doing it. So it's just interesting to see like how we push each other, I guess, in that sense.
It's pretty awesome. You know, for the team here in our organization, we've got about 4,500 soldiers, you know, and we always talk about the importance of fitness and being an athlete. So it doesn't matter if it's, you know, if you live this ready life to be an athlete, whether it's, you know, you're always having this desire to compete and win. And down here, we say it's really, it's about being professional athletes, you know, with guns. What does it mean when somebody says, you know, are you an athlete? What does that mean to you?
Man, it's at this point, it's definitely, it's part of my identity. I've been, I guess, competing at the high level since I was 13 years old. But I think it has to do more with your mentality. You know, it's grit. It's your ability to stick with things when they get boring. It's part of it is your ability to learn new skills. How fast can you learn them? How fast can you adapt to the terrain that you're put in? And how long can you stick with it, especially when it gets tough? Because anybody can have a great time getting into the military the first year when everything's new and when you're making improvements, or getting into powerlifting when you're hitting a bunch of personal records. But who are the ones that can actually stick with it when resistance starts pushing against you? And that, to me, that's part of the mindset of being an athlete. Also, consistency, right? Are you coming in on the days that you feel beat up, that you feel like shit, that you don't want to do it? Are you still showing up? That is what makes the difference between the average and the best, or the regular people that exercise for whatever, for the sake of it, and people who come in with a plan. People that come in with that training, with that athlete mindset.
You're speaking the our love language when we talk with our soldiers about the importance of grit and resiliency. You know, Angela Duckworth talked about that in her book, you know, about really what grit was and these long-term goals and its persistence and perseverance over a long time. And everything that you've talked about are really like the stages. It's about this interest and fueling this passion. It's finding the purpose. It's focusing, as you mentioned, the routine and the focus of doing all these reps and the multiple approaches. And then probably the most important piece is, as you mentioned, it's this mindset of growth, and it's this ability, as you've mentioned several times in the beginning of the conversation, if you fail at something, you continue to pick yourself back up and get after it, and you find the approach. And just hearing your story, and for those, you know, that are not familiar with, you've been an athlete, you know, since you were young. And you know, you wasn't always in the gym lifting weights or against resistance. You actually started as a soccer player, as I understand, and you were pretty good. So I was wondering if you could kind of share, you know, your journey and what its importance and what did sports really kind of teach you. You've talked about really the athlete and the miss mentality. So for the team that's listening, when we talk about being an athlete or professional athletes with guns, you know, what you've highlighted, it reinforces some of the messaging that says why to be an athlete truly means that you have to have grit and resiliency. But for sports being such an important part of your life and being a star soccer player at an early age, you know, could you share with us what you kind of learned from that journey of starting with soccer up to powerlifting?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll go back a little bit to the topic of grit and persevering, being resilient and pushing back against resistance. I think one thing that goes kind of just like it's underlooked is that people don't see the daily fluctuations that even the highest performers have, right? It's like, it's easy to feel discouraged when you're comparing your average to somebody's highlight reel. That's why I try to vocalize that a little bit more on my social media. It's just the part of me that is human, because that is something that everybody struggles with. It's that the fact that you know, there's going to be weeks that you're actually not going to show up to training. There's going to be weeks where your diet's going to go to shit. There's going to be weeks where you're not going to perform your best. Like, that happens to everyone. But progress happens when the average of your efforts continues trending upwards. So I think the mistake that people make is they fall off the wagon for whatever reason. You know, they eat a cheat meal, or they go on vacation for a couple of weeks and they stop training. And then they immediately almost like assume that everything that they did before is thrown in the garbage and now they have to start from zero. But it's not like that. It's, again, it's the average of your efforts. So the ability to just like brush those things off and just continue pushing forward is essentially what makes someone continuously progress. And going back to your second question, I guess, about soccer and kind of how I got to where I am, it's been exactly that same mindset. It's just like my mantra when it comes to training is keep showing up. Just keep showing up. It doesn't matter. Did you do well? Did you do bad? Did you feel good? Did you feel bad? It doesn't matter. You show up the next day and you do it all over again. Or you don't. And you show up next week. Or you don't. And you show up next month. But show up at some point and try to keep it semi-consistent. That's kind of like been my approach when it comes to, I guess, to athletics. So when I was 13, I got into the national soccer team. I always wanted to be a professional athlete, whatever that meant. Like, I wasn't married to soccer. I was married to the idea of being a professional athlete. And what's the word professional? What does that mean to me? It's a bunch of variables, some of which are in your control, some of which are not. The ones that are in your control is the intensity of your efforts. How hard are you trying when you come in? What's your attitude like? Are you coming in with a positive attitude, with an attitude that's contagious, that people want to be around you, that your coaches want to train you? Because all of those things are things that are going to impact your performance in both the short and the long term. So paying attention to those things that you can control and then letting go of the things that you can't control. Did you get stronger from this block to this block? No. Well, did you do everything that was in your power? Yes. Fuck it. Move on. Right? Or sit down and think about why that happened. But I think it's the ability of control the controllables and let go of the things that you can't control, what essentially keeps somebody pushing forward.
Where did you get this mindset from? You know, early on, and what was your inspiration? Because you sound and you highlight a lot of things just in the mind of an athlete, and really it's your approach. You talk about this grit and resiliency, and I'm impressed even with the same thing that you're talking about today, is being willing to be open, vulnerable, and transparent about when you, as a professional athlete that's always wanting to compete, that you do have your own challenges and struggles. Where did you get this inspiration from?
You know what? So, like I said, my goal was to be a professional athlete. My goal was not to be in the MLB, like, or in the female soccer, professional soccer. So it's the ability to appreciate and accept that you're going to have to quit a bunch of times. What kind of like led me through this road of introspection and also studying, why is it that I don't seem to have followed the successful people path? I actually seem to have followed the complete opposite. Like, I'm unorganized, I'm a procrastinator, I'm a quitter. You know, I have like all of these, there's a bunch of like negatively charged words that I feel like are attached to my character, that I was having a hard time understanding how someone who's like me was able to achieve that level of success. And so started reading books like The Dip by Seth Godin. So it pretty much like talks about when to quit and why are some of the whole winners never quit mentality is so ass backwards. It's in order to win, you gotta quit. You have to try a bunch of different things until you find what it is that you're good at, what it is that your aptitudes, your skills, and your talents line up the best for you to do. And then, you know, that's how you essentially become the best at something. It's not through being complacent. It's not through just being like, all right, like, this is what I'm gonna do, and I guess like I'm just gonna try my best and stick with it forever, even if I'm not good at it. It's the ability to be able to like quit and move on to the next thing as well. So I forgot what your question was. I think I'm like deviating way far away from it. Is the more podcasts that you do, the better you get at like saying nothing? You just start kind of like looping around the topic.
I think you just let the person tell your guests tell you their story and however you want. And, but no, you know, going back to when you're sharing this, I hear the same thing just as a parent, you know, and when we receive new soldiers as well, because a lot of times, you know, you hear the story about parents that put their kids into one sport early on because they want them to be successful at that. And they don't allow them, you know, it's kind of like one of the first stages is, you know, let them experience, you know, this play and this interest and then fuel that passion. You know, one of the things I tell my son is, you know, you really see in individuals, once their talent, work ethic, and passion are all aligned, you can truly see, you know, their potential and kind of how scary good they could be at something. And sometimes you won't know that, you know, when they're young. And sometimes you won't know it when they're in their teens or even when they're in their young 20s. So as you go through that portion of it, I think that what you offered is, hey, it's not just necessarily as, hey, I moved from soccer to CrossFit to running and then, you know, found this. You still had this passion to compete. And as you mentioned, right, you wanted to be a professional athlete. And so for those that are listening, you know, for our soldiers, when they choose to do something to be part of less than 1% of the population, there's a reason. You know, they had something that kind of fueled them, and there might have been some inspiration as it. I'm interested, you know, because you must have been, as they were growing up, your parents or your grandparents or family must have been incredibly impressed that you just had this drive, you know, from such a young age that I think a lot of us as parents really want to see in our kids.
It's interesting that you bring it up. I'm, you know, at this point, my mom and my dad are very proud of me, but I come from a Hispanic Jewish household. So I think, and especially, I guess like, times have changed, but it is not common for a Hispanic Jewish woman to put her career and her professional career and her athletic career to put that first, before like say getting married and having a family. So I was one of those kind of like I was like the black sheep of the family. I was heavily misunderstood as a child. I don't think to this point my mom even understands like why I do what I do, why these challenges and these goals and performing athletically at the highest level and performing professionally at the highest level. I don't think she even understands that. And you know, I'm sure that, yes, everybody who's in the military understands that. Like, you have that fire, but that's something that can't be taught. That, like, inner passion and fire that fuels you every day, that's something that can't be taught, and sometimes people don't understand. So, like I said, yeah, my mom, they're proud of me, but for a long time, they just didn't understand why I was doing what I was doing, why it was so important for me to go to soccer practice every day. Why did I prefer to not go on a vacation and go to a soccer camp and train with the guys? Or why did I want to stay in the soccer field from 9 a.m. until 10 p.m.? And like, they even questioned, is that what you're doing? Are you sure? Like, you sure you weren't? Like, I'm like, no, mom, like, I was actually training this entire time. So,
it's interesting that you share that. You know, my son was talking to us earlier today about how they take that personality test when they're in high school, and it prints out a couple of jobs, you know, that they would be pretty good at, you know. And my wife texted me today and she said, you'll never believe this. One of the occupations that they offered to him was circus entertainer. And she's like, oh dear God, we're going to have to send him in the military, you know, cause we can't have this guy growing up in clown shoes. So, but you know, the thing that I'm impressed about your story, and I've heard you mention this in a couple quotes and things, is you talk about this positivity that maybe your parents just didn't necessarily understand, but they were supportive, you know? And so it goes back to one of those things that we share with our team of the importance of having a positive, you know, network of people that are going to make sure, you know, as I tell my son, not surrounding yourself with joy thieves, that, you know, they may not understand what you're passionate or what you're following, but they're encouraging, you know, and they're encouraging you to challenge over comfort. Because if this is what you're going to do, then it's like, okay, let's do it.
Exactly. Yeah. I say, you know, the most influential people in my life have always been my coaches, just like people who believe in me more than I even believe in myself, and who are pushing me whenever I feel like quitting. And I do. I feel like quitting all the time. I just wrote a post about that. Like, people think that those kinds of thoughts don't go through like people's minds, people who are athletes' minds. Man, I'm sure I'm not the only one. Training is tough. We all feel like quitting at points, but it is having that support system, even if it's one person who's there telling you, hey, don't give up. Like, you can do it. You have what it takes to continue pushing you forward. For me, it's been, like I said, my coach, my soccer coach, my first soccer coach, my Olympic weightlifting coach, and now my boxing coach. It's been awesome. You know, so the last 2 years, you know, I kind of like came to terms with the fact that, for me at least, powerlifting is not a lifelong sport. It's very demanding on your body. So for the last 2 years, again, I've been in this discovery phase. That's what I wanted to touch back on. So on the topic of trying multiple things, trying different sports, try to see what you're good at, I call that a discovery phase. And you can do that with your career professionally, or you do it with your partners. You know, when you're like dating a bunch of people, you're essentially trying to figure out what's out there. And you do it athletically as well. And these discovery phases are not necessarily married to your age. You don't only enter a discovery phase when you're a little kid. And you don't only enter athletically, or you don't only enter a profession discovery phase when you're in college. Like, you can go through multiple cycles of that in your life. So a couple of years ago, I kind of came to terms with the fact that this powerlifting thing wasn't going to be forever. And I entered another discovery phase athletically. So again, I met up with Manning Sumner, who's an ex-NFL football player. And I was like, man, what's going to be my next thing? Like, I got to figure it out. And I tried, I did Muay Thai, some MMA, tried some grappling stuff. I tried out for the WWE wrestling. And now eventually I landed in boxing and found something that kind of like aligns with what I'm good at and that I also enjoy. So yeah, these discovery phases, they're so important. It's so important to quit. It's so important to understand when you should quit, when it's time for you to move on to the next thing. Obviously the right reason is never because you encounter resistance. Like, there has to be something more. Either you've reached the top that you can give, and that's it. Like, you've found the best that you can be at that one thing, or you're not competitive enough. There's people that are better than you that realistically you'll never be able to beat, no matter how hard you train, no matter how hard you prepare yourself. So it's like quitting proactively versus reactively, and then finding the next thing and going through these cycles for your entire life, having that inner kind of passion and need to excel, to be able to do it all over again, become a beginner all over again in cycles.
Yeah. I think what we share with our team, you know, a lot of times it's how do you continue to fuel that passion, you know, and as you work through it, it's different transitions. And so, you know, at some point as you get older, you know, your physical fitness is going to be a little bit different than it was when I was younger. You know, your preparation's a little bit different. So how can I continue to take this drive for competitiveness and want to be, you know, want to compete in the arena, and then take that same aspect of it? So in our business, we call it, you know, this journey of the profession of arms. And a lot of times, you know, you start off as a member, and it's, you know, what I was doing PT for early on in my age is not necessarily the same thing now, where I have a bunch of, you know, young 18-year-olds that want to test you, including my young 16-year-old, you know, at the house. But now as you're working through that portion of it, you're still expected to be physically fit, but you're finding ways that what else do you need to do to drive to still have that level of competitiveness? And how do you bring it to the next level in an organization? Or how do you do it within a team? You know, and I appreciate that, you know, you're continuing to find other things that you can apply the same level of passion that you ended up having, you know, whether it was within sports and it started with soccer, or it ended up moving into powerlifting. I was wondering if you could just share, like, what was the moment that your coach or you realized, like, dude, I can lift some weight? you know, and everybody kind of like just like stopped back and was like, she can lift some weight.
So, okay. So I got into weightlifting from CrossFit, started doing Olympic weightlifting. I found myself, actually, my coach found me. He saw me training in the corner of a CrossFit gym. And he's Cuban, Camilo is his name. And he just goes, hey, you want to go to the Olympics? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, cool, because I'm going to train you for free. You got what it takes. You got the speed, you got the power, you got the athleticism. Like, I'm going to coach you for free. And every single day for the following 4 years, this guy at 6 a.m. was sending me my training program, like handwritten on a text message. So, you know, I had this dream of going to the Olympics. The Olympics in Olympic weightlifting is you compete in the snatch and the clean and jerk. So they're slightly different movements than in powerlifting. Eventually, you know, so if you are serious about that type of training, you have to train twice a day. It's like 9 training sessions per week. It's a lot. Eventually I got into grad school and found that I couldn't sustain that amount of training sessions. So that's when I started, you know, I said, well, you know what? I'm going to put Olympic weight, this goals on the backseat while I focus on getting my graduate degree, my doctorate, and just focus on things that are not that demanding in terms of focus in my mind. Like they're not movements that are not that technically demanding. That's how I got started with squat, bench, and deadlift, which are the powerlifting movements. It was kind of like a temporary solution to the problem of not being able to train as much as I can or with the intensity that I wanted to. And within a few weeks, this is when I had actually just met my fiance Hayden. Within a few weeks, we were testing squat, you know, pushing those movements in strength, because usually in Olympic weightlifting, the squat and the deadlift are accessory movements. You don't necessarily try to set PRs in those movements. They just kind of like are there. And within a few weeks, we started pushing the weight on the squat and the deadlift, and they just kept going up, 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 up linearly. It was almost as if I had like a training blue balls. Like I just kind of like always trained at 85, 90%, never tested it. And then all of a sudden I let myself go and I started hitting all of these PRs that I've pretty much like accumulated over the last 4 years. And so it was one of my first deadlift sessions and I just hit 315. Mind you, at that time, you know, nowadays girls are a lot stronger, but at that time I was one of the few girls that could deadlift 315. And it was like my third time doing sumo deadlift. And for me and for my coach as well, that was when we were like, I guess I can do this. Isn't the world record like 308? You know, so that's how I got into it. I just kind of like really powerlifting found me. You know, I didn't really, was it the thing I loved the most? Nah, like my love at that point, especially was Olympic weightlifting. I wanted to go to the Olympics, but I usually start developing passions for the things that I'm the best at. So that changed quick. I went from not being too interested in powerlifting to absolutely loving it, not necessarily because of what the sport was, but more so because of what I could accomplish with it.
That's pretty neat. You know, and I think that, you know, for soldiers that are going through it, it's kind of like you go through all this training and sometimes, and you've mentioned it before, sometimes you don't necessarily see the gains and some other priority comes up and you put it to the side just a little bit. You still have this, you know, you want to go back to it. And then the next thing you know is, hey, you're making all these accomplishments and you go on this great run on certain things. So that's a pretty neat story. You know, it's also impressive as you're going through this at the same time, you're still managing, you know, to be, you know, certified as a personal trainer, strength and conditioning, and then you get your doctor, become a physical therapist. So as you work through this, you know, as you now start to realize, and I've heard you talk a couple of times, like on a couple of videos about the importance of recovery, you know, and going through, what advice would you give to the team for somebody that's, you know, going through an injury about the importance of recovery? What did you personally learn? And then now the importance of doing prehab before executing, you know, any type of hard training?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think that especially with overachievers, we tend to hyper-focus on how much work we're doing. We tend to go all out in training and it's almost like you don't want to take your foot off the gas because you think it's it's a show of weakness, right? Like you just want to, you always want to do your best. You always want to go above and beyond. And you don't necessarily think about recovery because you only think about giving all you've got during training, right? But, and I had that mindset for such a long time until I started getting hurt often, like more often and more often and more often. And that's when I realized that all it takes is a shift in perspective. All it takes is a shift in mindset in terms of you got to stop thinking about how fast can you get better? How fast can you get stronger? How fast can you run longer? To how long can I stay injury free? Because most of these training adaptations take time to happen. So it doesn't matter like if you can train for 6 or 8 weeks or 16 weeks. What matters is can you train for 2, 4, 6 years? That's the only way that you can actually kind of uncover your full potential. So with that mindset of like, I'm just going to go all out to see like how fast can I get to this goal? That's a short-sighted mindset because you're not going to last long enough to be able to see what you can actually do. So training is a lot more about fatigue management than it is about sets and reps and progressive overload, really, because you won't be able to get stronger or faster or run longer if you can't recover from the current demands that you're exposing your body to. So, you know, obviously, like in terms of prehabilitation, rehabilitation, and fatigue management, recovery, the main thing that comes to my mind is how are you organizing your training? And that is known in the literature as periodization. It's a fancy word for how are you organizing your training. And, you know, I think that even so for a sport like powerlifting, we're so hyper-specialized that we forget about all other aspects of human performance. So, you know, you got to think about strength. You got to think about endurance. You got to think about cardiovascular health. You got to think about flexibility. You got to think about psychology, like your brain. How's your brain doing? How are you doing mentally? And all of these things need to be worked in your macro cycle, in the cycle that you're going to do over a year. You got to plan, when am I going to go balls to the wall? When is the time that I'm really going to put my body to test? Because you got to know, if you fly close to the sun, you're going to burn some feathers, right? So you can't be always close, flying close to the sun. You're going to die, right? So you got to have those periods of time where you're going to incrementally push your training so that you're taking these kind of bigger risks in terms of what you're putting your body through. And then for other periods of time, you got to dial it back. You got to dial it back and you got to take care of the other aspects of human performance. Like I said, obviously, yeah, your nutrition, your sleep, your cardiovascular health, your flexibility, etc. So how are you going to organize that in a year so that you can avoid burnout and perform your best and try to avoid as many injuries as you can? And the topic of injuries and recovery and all of that, I think it's made a lot more complex than it actually is. All that it is planning. Injuries happen when the load that you're exposing your bodies to overcomes the current capacity of a tissue. And that is it. It's not a movement that you did. It's not 1 week of training that led you to that. It's the accumulation of all of this load, all of this stress that you're putting on your body and an inability of your body to withstand that at the current time. So yeah, again, I danced around your question. What was your question? Recovery, prehab, rehab. Okay. I think I covered a bit of all of that.
You absolutely did. So for the leaders that are listening, right? So, you know, I'm a squad leader and I have a responsibility anywhere up from, you know, 5 to 7 to 9 soldiers. And I have to come up with a physical fitness plan and monitor them. So as I hear it, you know, that plan is not just showing up and doing whatever activity it is. And if you're only looking at it as individual, you know, tasks or just doing it for the day, you're not looking at it in a long term. And I think that's a great way to look at it in a perspective is how long can I keep these 9 individuals continuing to progress, but really the first goal being injury free. which is a point that we in the military are always trying to go back to, is how do we reduce the musculoskeletal injuries that we have? Because everybody comes in at a different level of performance. But what advice would you give to that leader who may not have any of the knowledge, may not have been an athlete? Where do you start when it comes to the eat, sleep, and then train to be responsible for this group of people?
Yeah. Okay. So I think the easiest way to break it down is to think about all things training, anything that's strenuous. It's kind of tapping into your sympathetic nervous system. So this is your fight or flight state. So anytime you're training, you're putting your body, it's stress, training, your life, you know, your arguments with your wife, that's all putting you in a sympathetic state. Now, how can you recover from that? You have to make an equal, you have to separate and make an equal amount of time to putting your body in the rest and digest state or the parasympathetic state. And that is part of training. So that's the part of training that's not sexy, that's not hot, that, you know, that most people tend to skip, but is as important. So for however many hours you're training, you're pushing your body, you have to spend however many hours to put your body in a parasympathetic state. So how do you do that? You do that through meditation. You do that through journaling. You do that through breath work. You do that through leisure activities like walking and being in nature. How many athletes do you know that actually make time for those things?
No idea.
None. Like I was never like that until I started understanding that it is part of training. Like you have the part of you who is go time, who's ready to like kill it in a training session. And then you also have to train the part of, you have to put your body in that parasympathetic state so that you can actually recover from the demands of training. So I think if you break it down like that, if you just view recovery as like an integral part of your training, then it's a lot easier to make the right choices, right? It's like, you have to sleep. You have to sleep 7 to 10 hours a night. You got to eat nutritiously dense foods. But then you also have to actively do things that put you in a parasympathetic state. So it's fine. If you don't like meditating, there's so many, there's like guided breath work that seems like training. If you're not familiar with Brian McKenzie, he's amazing. He has a research center called the Human Health Research for Human Health Performance, and they basically specialize in recovery programs, literally. Like it's all breath work, it's all it's non-mindfulness meditation, and that's what he calls it. So it's not like the type of meditation that you're just closing your eyes and trying to let your mind go blank. It actually involves a series of exercises and a very specific type of breath work to get your body in a parasympathetic state.
No, I appreciate you sharing that. You know, it's interesting because you're speaking the same thing when we lay out training, just military training, and comparing it to the amount of time that we need to recover as an organization. So we use all this equipment, and then you know what we sacrifice? We sacrifice the time to actually recover our equipment. And now you're talking, we're just talking the aspect of physical fitness. I think that's a great way to look at it. So whatever you're doing, make sure you're also doing the same thing that it plans the recovery, you know, that you're going to end up having to think through the sleep and nutrition and all those pieces of it as well.
But you know why? I think the reason why people don't do it is because of a lack of structure. At least that's why I haven't done it in the past. But so I found Brian and I found his training programs and I'm like, oh, wait, this is the second part of my training. This is the type of training I do when I'm home. The type of training I do at 7 a.m. when I wake up, my breath work, my diaphragm work. It is part of training. All I need is structure. All I need is a plan. Okay, like on Monday, you're going to do this. Because athletes, that's how we are, right? Like, you got to have structure. You got to have planning. You got to have sets and reps. That's how our minds work. If there's no guideline, you don't do it. Like we're not free spirited people that are going to be like, all right, I'm going to sit down and meditate. That's never going to happen. It has to be integrated into the person's plan so they can actually visualize it and understand the value and then easily implement it. If you have it in front of you and you have, okay, so upon when you wake up, you're going to take 30 diaphragmatic breaths. Is that so hard? No. Okay. You already have it in. You brush your teeth, you take 30 diaphragmatic breaths. Boom. breathing out of the way. So it's like if it's integrated into your plan, it's written and it's specific and it's goal oriented, that's a lot more easy for people to do than if you say eat well, sleep a lot, and meditate. That's the goal. That's not the system. And that's why most people fail. That's why, you know, everybody knows that in order to lose weight, you got to eat less, right? But eat less is not good advice. How can I eat less? Okay. What are you going to do? You're going to rearrange your kitchen so you don't put the things that are calorie dense, easily accessible to you. You're going to increase your protein intake so that you feel satiated and you don't feel a need to eat high calorie, low nutrition value foods. That is the how. That is the system. So I think it's the trainer's, the coach's role to be equipped with the tools to be able to formulate these systems for their athletes or their soldiers in order for it to be easy for them to do their job, which is just to follow the plan. Because it's like, you know, I'm giving you a perfect pass when I give you a laid out plan that also includes very specific instructions and how your recovery needs to be. Then it's on you. The ball's on your court, you know? But I did my job as a trainer, as a coach, as a mentor in laying it out perfectly for you.
Yeah, that's something, as you mentioned that, right? So that's what our leaders are doing when they lay that out. It's not just the PT portion. It's everything that you mentioned out in terms of the recovery and the diet and all this. But the thing that I like is what we share is with a lot of leaders. It's one thing to share, hey, the why we're doing this and own the why and the goal or the end state. But as you mentioned, it's really, you got to do a little bit of education yourself as the coach and the trainer so you can come up with multiple ways on the how and come up with the approaches that are helping as you're going through that. And so it's interesting, right, as you share that stuff with us, because the only other – we've had several guests that have talked about, you know, as they've learned, you know, and kind of – and mastered their craft and continue to be a student of their profession, they've talked about the importance of journaling. They've talked about the importance of finding some time to take a walk, to do some things, and they've realized that later on. You know, they've been very, very talented. They've figured out this grit and resilience portion of it, but it's been, how do I take myself down on this off this level? How do I do the free play? How do I release my mind and work through the transition so I can prepare for this next event? So I was wondering, I think that's a pretty good segue because, you know, for the team that may not be familiar, you've got your own little gym that I know you and Hayden are, you know, in charge of over there. So what is Team Hybrid all about? I was looking on the site and I thought it was pretty impressive. You know, how did the vision start for this and this idea? And as I looked through a couple things on there and you talked about, you know, this unbeatable mindset, a community, you talk about strength is style. I was wondering if you could share with the team, you know, how this idea came up in this 5-year journey now, and you're sharing with some of the things that you're doing for those that want to come and participate.
Yeah, that's a great question. So initially Hybrid started out as a passion project. We were training hybrid style. We were training Olympic weightlifting and powerlifting around that time when I told you I was like easing myself into powerlifting. And that generated a lot of interest. Like I was going to national competitions in weightlifting and crushing it there, you know, snatching 200 pounds, clean and jerking 250 pounds, and then going in and deadlifting 450 pounds. And that really kind of was against most of the traditional training styles that are common in kind of like Western culture. So people started inquiring about it. They were like, oh man, like how are you so ripped, but you can lift so much? How are you still fast, but you're strong? How are you, you know, by merging all of these disciplines, how are you doing all of them? How do you, and that's how our mantra, how our slogan came about, look like a bodybuilder, lift like a powerlifter, move like a weightlifter. They were questioning like if it was even possible for them to be like that. So we started seeing all these questions come in and we were like, well, maybe we should just like start writing our training and offering it to people because it seems like people are curious. At that time I had 3,000 followers and Hayden was famous. Hayden had 11,000 followers. And we decided to create our own software to distribute those training plans. So again, it goes back to being a professional. There's a difference from being a hustler and being an entrepreneur in that a hustler only focuses on kind of making a quick buck, and an entrepreneur actually forms a well thought of plan and organization and presents themselves as a leader and as a professional in the industry. So we created our emails, we registered our company, we started working on our software, investing into it, hired a software developer, and then had a few months in, 6 months after, we had like the beta version, like the first version of our platform. And we put out on Instagram, we said, hey, we need 10 to 15 beta testers. If you want to be a beta tester, enter your email here. And we got about 600 people applying for it. And that's when it became clear. We're like, damn, like, yeah, we have something interesting here. Initially, the plan was to sell that software. So at that time, the only competitors in the, at least like in the software world were, was Train Heroic. There weren't a lot of platforms that were working on creating a platform for trainers to distribute their workout program. So we thought we could compete there. And we were going to use Hybrid as like the example for how you can use the platform. But the deeper that we got into it, the more people signed up, and it grew exponentially. It grew so fast that we decided to, I guess, keep that platform to ourselves. So fast forward 5 years, you know, we've worked with hundreds of thousands of people. We currently have about 11,000 active members on the training side and about 2,000 on the nutrition side. And we've kind of been able to grow multiple verticals, one vertical a year almost. Well, actually, yeah, exactly. One vertical per year. Found that the importance of kind of diversifying your income streams is super important. And it was so obvious during this pandemic, because had it not have been for the fact that we've spent so much time developing our apparel, for example, we would have been pretty screwed. You know, apparel went from making 3% of our total revenue to making 35% of our total revenue, especially now during the pandemic. So yeah, I mean, that's how it started. It started out as, you know, let's just offer our training programs for fun. And it quickly grew into a multi-million dollar business, built upon that, built a nutrition business, built the gym, built the apparel, started podcasts, YouTubing, and now we're actually, so this year's vertical is a print shop. So we have a 5,000 square foot space that we're doing all of our printing in-house, and we're starting to offer it to other people as well.
Oh, that's great. That's impressive. And, you know, it goes back to the same thing as you mentioned, right? You're venturing out on all these different, you know, lines of effort as you're going through this. So, you know, just in the times that, you know, conditions have changed with COVID, you're still looking at other ways. But it's interesting, right? As you talked about it, it started with this passion project. You know, people were interested in what you guys were doing. And as I was reading through your guiding principles, and you talked about, you know, the mindset, and you talked about, you know, your mantra as you're going through, people are going to want to know. And I always kind of ask the same thing, you know, when people ask, like, you know, how did you do this? Or, you know, how did your son end up being this way? I'm like, are you really want to know, or are you just pulling for, you know, the answer until you get the solution that you want to hear, right? It's like when people ask, like, hey, what did you do for that workout? It's like, well, I do CrossFit like 9 hours a day. I'm like, that sounds awful. I don't want to do that. Until you get the answer, like, you know, all I do is eat hot Cheetos and do shake weights. And like, okay, I want to do that workout. But it sounds like when you guys were building this, it's the same advice that you were given to our leaders. You come up with a plan. They're interested in how to do this. You know, how do you maintain speed, the cardiovascular piece, you know, nutrition. And I think one of the most important things that you were saying is, how do you keep people healthy? So you can actually look and, you know, it goes back to one of those things that I saw that you were talking about, this auto-regulation. Because if you don't keep yourself healthy, then how do you really know what to tweak in your workout as you're going through those pieces of it?
For sure. Yeah. And it goes back again to the whole culture part. And in terms of like building a business, it's focusing on the people. What do people need? Focus on the people, not the product, has been kind of like what our focus has been. How can we better how can we serve this, whatever need is in the market, and how can we do it better than everyone else? And how can we continuously make the people who support us feel better in whatever way we can? And I think I attribute a lot of the success to that, to the culture of the business and the fact that we're not in it to make a quick buck. We're in it for the long run. We're in it for the right reasons. And people can smell that from a mile away. Like when you're in it just to like for clout or like for disingenuous reasons versus like when you're in it to actually make a difference.
So now you're talking about, you know, this organizational leadership and the culture piece of it that also, you know, transcends and translates to what we do. And as you're kind of building this team and people have this interest, and I believe that people want to be on a winning team. So it's, how do you recognize, how do you make sure you make it challenging? And at the same time, you're moving individuals that are, you know, going from compliance, like, as you mentioned, hey, I'm nervous about even stepping into a gym, let alone now I'm committed, even though that along the way I may have some challenges with some gains. You know, I was wondering if you could share, like, what would you have in terms of advice for those that are struggling with, you know, getting in shape? You know, they've started several different diets, you know, they've gone a couple different workouts. Those that have never really been in the gym or are intimidated to go in there, how do you take that first step, you know, to walking in there, being, you know, having a healthier life and knowing that being part of an athlete, like your experience was never part of their experience before they came into the military?
It goes back to my own training mantra, keep showing up. Like, how do you take the first step? You just take the first step. Like, there's no way to sugarcoat it, right? At some point, you have to make yourself vulnerable and you have to face your fears, face your insecurities, and put yourself in situations where you are going to be uncomfortable. That's what training is, right? Like, how else do you get better if you're not uncomfortable? Man, I'm doing boxing and people, I sparred for the first time last week. I got beat up. Do you think I wasn't scared? Like, I came in to the ring with a girl that's been boxing for 3 years. I just came in with my brand new gloves from the store. You know, at some point you just got to be vulnerable and you just have to do it. And then over time, you know, that's how you adapt. And our bodies and our brains are amazing in that they literally adapt to anything. But you have to put yourself in those situations. And then the second part is the consistency portion. It's like, just try to go one time per week and set yourself small goals. Because that's how you amount to a big progress as you start small. What can you realistically commit to? Because people are like, January 1st rolls in and they're like, I'm going to buy a gym membership. I'm going to go every day. Well, you're not, all right? Because for the last 15 years, you've been to the gym one time. It's 5 years ago on January 1st, right? So realistically, you're not going to go every day of the week. So why don't you start by going one time? And when you can go one time for 3 months straight, then you go two times. And when you can go two times for 3 more months straight, you go three times. And that's how you build. Because it's a matter of habits and lifestyle, what's going to get you the results that you want. And you build them up slowly. There's this amazing book called Atomic Habits by James Clear. It's so good. I actually had James on my podcast. And the entire book is filled with strategies to make habits stick. There's not only one way to build a habit. There's like so many little tips and tricks that you can use to ingrain something to become part of your routine. So for example, it's like, I think one of the ones that he talks about are, say you want to start jogging every day, leave your shoes right next to the door. You want to start reading every day, leave a book right next to your nightstand table, leave another book right downstairs next to your coffee maker. Make it easy. Make whatever you want to do easy and make what you don't want to do hard. You don't want to eat shit. Put your shit away. Don't buy it. You want to eat better? Make your healthy food accessible. You want to run more? Put your shoes right next to the door. And it's such, when you read it, it's like, oh yeah, obviously. Like, that makes a ton of sense. But it's things that we think are so easy that we don't even think about, right? We go for the fat. We go for the fat loss pill. We go for the 3 easy steps to get abs, that we forget that man, it's actually not that hard. It's like these little small tweaks and adjustments to your day-to-day life that are gonna help you stick with the things that you want to do. So one of the, another great one was, I think he calls it bundling in the book. And it's pretty much when you take a habit that you already have, for example, brushing your teeth. Hopefully everybody brushes their teeth twice a day. And you pair that habit that's already ingrained that you've been doing since you were one, whatever, five. When do you get teeth? I don't know. That you get from the time that you're five, and you slap the new habit onto it. So it's like, okay, so as soon as I brush my teeth, I'm going to take 30 diaphragmatic breaths. You know, every morning you're going to brush your teeth. So if you just, it's kind of like a, I don't know, you're taking the momentum from that one habit that's already ingrained, and you're just, you know you're going to do it. So essentially, you know you're going to do the next one. And like that, there's so many. There's another one, last example that I go through. There's another one that's the 2-minute rule. So it's saying, okay, I'm going to say that I'm going to go to the gym for 2 minutes. 2 minutes, that's all. Even if it is just going to the gym and leaving. And it's so true. Like, I've been so many times in the situation where I don't want to train, and I'm like, 2 minutes. I'm just going to train for 2 minutes. And I go, and 2 minutes is a warm up. So I start jumping rope, or I start like running on the treadmill. 2 minutes go by, and I'm like, this is the best. I'm loving it, you know? And I end up doing a 2-hour workout. You know, that's happened more times than I can count. So often.
We call that like bolting on, right? So something that you find that you already do, that you know you do every day, you know, add it to the, you know, that portion of it, because you know it's going to be a reminder. You know, I have books all over my house. I'm reading like 4 or 5 books at the same time. That my challenge is, my wife goes behind and is like, you know, getting on me for leaving that stuff. But it's the same thing. You know, you leave something in one location where you know you're going to spend time, and it's going to be there. And it's a choice, right, that you have. And then the other thing is just that little 2-minute piece of it. It's the same thing. You know, we sat down with Dr. Cialdini, and he talked about persuasion and about the 6 steps that you do, and just making these little notes. When you write something down, it's like a small commitment to yourself. You know, as you go through this, it goes back to the reinforcing comment that you mentioned there about journaling. So I just want to make sure that I was clear, right, as you're going through these atomic habits since Halloween's over. So you're saying it's not good to have the Halloween candy, you know, on the kitchen, you know, counter past a week.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't do that. Yeah, man, if I had a jar of candy in my counter, that'd be gone in 3 days. I'm not even kidding you. Yeah. I don't have that sort of willpower.
Yeah. You know, so you shared with us, like, you know, the importance of this routine and the self-discipline and accountability. And one of the videos that I saw that you were going through as you were talking through your training was about cutting weight. And that just looks like an incredibly miserable experience that takes so much self-discipline. And I've seen it with some MMA fighters and others that have gone through, you know, the bodybuilding piece. But I was just wondering if you could share. I mean, you know, we don't have anybody that's necessarily going through something, you know, to that extreme, but there are experiences in the lessons, I think, when it comes to being so self-disciplined. Where do you take your mind? You know, what do you think about when you're going through that process and you're trying to lose like 10 pounds in a 24-hour period?
I honestly think it's an experience that's worth for everyone to give a shot. Not necessarily like dehydrating yourself to the point that I do, but don't eat for 24 hours. Like, why don't you do that every once in a while to callous your mind, to test your mental strength, to be able to say no to things that feel good, right? And just be miserable for a little bit. Because honestly, like, the good things in life are augmented to such an extent when you go through tough patches. So I talked about this recently as well, about how society glamorizes happiness and demonizes sadness. And it's the same concept. It's like, when you go through hard times, the good times are so much better, and they're there to teach you something. They're there to teach you willpower. They're there to teach you discipline. They're there to teach you consistency. You know, that there's lessons that are hidden in these like awful moments of your life, or 24 hours or whatever. And I know it might sound dramatic when I talk about it in terms of like cutting weight for a competition, but these are, you know, I guess I had that realization when I was going through one of those cuts about how some of the darkest periods of my life were the ones that taught me the most, and that taught me to appreciate the better times as well. So as far as those weight cuts go, I guess it's easy to stay focused when there's cash involved. You know, if I'm competing and there's a big cash purse, if I'm getting paid to break world records, like it's not fair to be for me to stand here and be like, oh yeah, I'm the most, you know, I have the best willpower of all. Obviously, like if somebody's hanging out a $50,000 check in front of you, like you also are not gonna eat, trust me, you know. But even when that wasn't involved, like even before there was any sort of money involved in powerlifting, I guess like to me it was a matter of like wanting to prove to myself that I was tough enough, that I could do it, that I could sit in a sauna for 12 hours without complaining. I guess that was it. You know, I value that like mental toughness aspect of training so much because I think it really pours out on all of your other aspects in life. Like likely, you know, everyone is gonna encounter a shitty moment in their life at some point. So how ready are you for that moment? Are you ready to deal with losing your parents? Are you ready to deal with like an unexpected death? Are you ready to deal with a sickness of your own, of somebody you love? So again, it might sound dramatic when talking about like, I'm just cutting weight for a competition, but really like, that's why I always say that training is a direct representation of life. Like you'll go through all those same times in life. And to me, like putting my mind and my body through those situations that suck so much kind of let me know that I'm strong, that I'm resilient, and that I can do it, that I can deal with whatever life throws at me. You know, I suffer from anxiety and panic attacks. And for me, just like, you know, there's times where I feel like I'm a victim of my condition, or that I feel weak because I'm scared of it. And I don't know what I'm scared of. So for me, it's like a proof that I can do whatever I want. You know, that if I have the mental strength, I can get through anything. And that's just part of training. That's part of training. You know, if you're cutting, the biggest cut I've done was this last year. I went from, in February, I went from 136 pounds down to 114 pounds in a period of like less than 48 hours. And it was brutal, but I loved every second of it. Like, I don't know how to explain it. Maybe I'm a masochist, but I loved every second of it. I'm like, I don't know. I honestly don't know any other chick that can sit in this sauna for 12 hours straight with a smile on her face. I don't know anyone. You know, I'm enjoying it. I welcome the pain. I welcome the discomfort because I know that there's not a lot of people who would put themselves through that situation. It makes me feel better about myself.
I think that, I don't know if I'm going to do the 12-hour sauna challenge, but you know, for those that are listening to this, I think that, you know, one of the things they can glean from it is, hey, you know, take these hard things, you know, and it's like the same thing I offer to my son, you know, that I only look at the reason why he struggles or he fails in something is kind of one of two ways. He didn't, you know, study the right material, or he didn't study or prep under conditions that were going to be harder than what he was going to be tested. And so that's part of a little bit what you're talking about. You know, a lot of times, you know, when we get ready, for the biggest challenge for us is the crucible of ground combat. So the things that we need to do, we need to know that we're doing some things that are going to be very, very difficult. There's going to be privation. You know, it's going to test some mental fortitude. Leaders are going to be tired. I mean, you mentioned this, and I was talking this story yesterday to my family at the dinner table, and they were talking about, hey, what's the longest you've ever stayed up and you haven't slept? And I told a story about I was in Ranger school, and I can't even remember. All I remember is, you know, coming to, and then I didn't have my boots on, and I have no idea how that ended up happening or why I was yelling at somebody, you know, over a machine gun. But it's one of those things you recognize, you don't realize that you can go through an experience like that and continue to do something like lead or go through a situation where you're expected, you know, to push through a situation that you're expected to do within combat. So I appreciate you sharing that with us.
For sure. Yeah, it's amazing.
It's all the neat things that you talked about today, you know, and your routines and the stuff that you share. What advice, you know, as we kind of wrap this thing up, you know, and I know that you and Hayden are both, you know, heavily involved in the physical fitness and this in the health nutrition business. But for those that are trying to inspire, you know, their significant others or in a relationship, you know, what are some techniques or things that you would offer? How do you encourage each other to go to the gym or keep pushing?
That's a tough one. I feel like sometimes this has never happened to me, but I've seen it happen to other people. When your significant other has a suggestion for you, it almost, you feel like they're attacking you or like it comes from like judgment. It's hard to accept things that your significant other is telling you to get better at, whether that's getting fitter or, I don't know, getting stronger or eating healthier. Like when it's coming from your significant other, it's sometimes very hard to digest for the other person and you feel personally attacked. So I think that when it comes from someone else, like I can't tell you how many times I've been reached out by a bro, just like a guy being like, hey, do you mind sending my girlfriend a message and explaining to her why lifting weights is good for her? And I know where that's coming from, right? Because like she doesn't want to listen to her boyfriend. So sometimes you got to have somebody who's like further away, further removed from that person so that she can not feel so emotional about whatever's coming her way. So whether that's like asking a friend or getting the person a coach, get your significant other like one session with a trainer that you trust and have the trainer explain the benefits of resistance training or the benefits of healthy eating or whatever. So an example is, you know, I've been doing this thing for over 10 years and it's been so hard to get my mom on board with a solid nutrition training plan. And so I spoke to Stan Efferdine. I don't know who he is. So he's in his mid 50s. He's very well spoken. He's achieved so much both athletically and in business. And I thought that would be a good person for my parents to listen to because in their eyes, I'm just a 28-year-old. Like, what do I know, right, about health? What do I know about fitness? Like, what do I know about mindset? I don't know any of those things. So that's what I did. I asked Stan, I'm like, hey man, like, can you sit down and talk to my mom for an hour about nutrition? Or I gave him a book by Lane Norton that he wrote about fat loss. So it's like when the advice is not coming directly from you, but you're, again, giving them a perfect pass, whether that's like not only linking them with a person, but scheduling it for them. Like I didn't just say, hey, call Stan. I said, mom, on July 31st at 5 p.m., you have a virtual appointment with Stan Efferdine. All you have to do is open your phone. And this is the Zoom link. Just throw a perfect pass. Give them a name, a number, a time. Instead of making it so vague. And then have it come from someone else. I think that just creates unnecessary tension in relationships sometimes.
No, I think that's great advice. I mean, that's part of the challenge that we have. A lot of times, you know, it's the same thing, whether it's, you know, my wife doesn't want to hear it from me, but she'll hear it from somebody else. And a lot of times it's from Google, you know? So, but even it's the same thing with my son, you know, he doesn't want to hear it from me, but when he hears it from somebody else, then he tells me, you know, something that I've told him, you know, several times before. So just that technique, it's the same thing that Dr. Cialdini had offered to us. He told a story about how his son, he could never get this individual to take off his floaties to get into the pool. I mean, he was, you know, enticing him. He was bribing him. He was, you know, trying to threaten him. And then one day, you know, he had another family came over and they had a younger, you know, a young boy that was the same age as his son. And then one day he saw his son, you know, run off the diving board and jump into the pool. And he about had a heart attack because he thought his son couldn't swim without these, you know, these arm floaties. And he walked over to him. He says, hey, what's the deal? Why is this the case? And he says, I'm not wearing my floaties because, you know, this kid's not wearing his floaties. So, you know, what you're talking about is a lot of times I know what we want is best. And I always kind of offer that portion of it because a lot of times this candor that we need to offer to the people that are closest to us that we have this unconditional love for, it's the hardest to give. And so a lot of times it's just finding somebody that, you know, in our job to deliver the right message. And for the team that's listening, that's the same thing with our soldiers. A lot of times it may not be the right approach. Part of the approach might be finding the right person to deliver the message that's going to make the impact with them.
Yes, and that happens in professional relationships as well. In my business, it happens to me all the time where somebody's slacking and I know I'm not the best person to deliver bad news, because that'll create, first, it's not going to be well received. It's going to create unnecessary stress in our culture, in our business culture. So I just tell it to somebody else, and someone else talks to them, and they take it perfectly fine, when I know it would have created an argument if I would have been the one that talks to them. So you're right. Yeah, the right person.
I really appreciate you taking the time and sitting down and having this conversation with us today. I told my son when we were working out that I was going to talk to a physical therapist, and she was a power lifter. And I said, "Do you want me to throw out the challenge?" And I said, "She only weighs about 120 pounds. And he says, "Yeah, that's not a big deal." He's 16. He's like 140 pounds. And then I showed a video of you on YouTube. He's like, "Don't challenge her."
That's funny.
But I appreciate everything that you've shared with us today, you know, this the same thing about this mentality about an athlete is really, if you're an athlete that's geared toward competing, you have this thing about grit and resiliency, you know, all the things that you've talked about in your approach with training and the discipline and how do you continue to keep after it. I appreciate the vulnerability. And like I mentioned before, you're really an inspiration, you know, not just to athletes, not just to young females or your peers, but at the same time, anybody, as I mentioned before, you know, that comes in small packages, you know, then kind of defies the laws of physics and what the appearance truly is, you know. And so best of luck to you and Team Hybrid as you continue to, you know, work through your ventures in the future. And, you know, when the team that's listening, we always leave with, you know, what are your questions? But I'd like to leave the final word with you.
With me?
Yes, ma'am.
With a question or just a statement?
Anything you want.
Anything I want. Man, I don't know. Let's keep it simple. For all your training nutrition needs, highperformancemethod.com, babies. That's all I got.
Well, thanks for sitting down with us today. And if you need anything, you know, you ever make your way up here to the Northwest, we'd love to have you up here in the Lancer Brigade. And we'd love to showcase our Lancer Performance Center, which is an opportunity where we have built this new health and holistic, you know, effort across the entire, you know, it's an initiative in the Army that talks through some things that we're working through with the prehab and the rehab to make sure we get after that goal you share with us about keeping our soldiers healthy and fit and injury free.
Awesome. Yeah. I would love actually to visit you guys. We should coordinate.
Absolutely. Well, take care of yourself, and I really appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Leadership Experience. If you like what you heard, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget to subscribe to keep up to date with the newest podcasts. The Leadership Experience will showcase professionals within five different subseries. Number one, Masters of Our Craft, The Essence of Warfighting. Number two, Students of Our Profession, as we understand organizational culture and concepts of leadership. Number three, professional athletes with guns, as we talk hardships and maintaining a competitive advantage. Number four, grit and resiliency, the ability to overcome and perform under pressure. And number five, safe and secure environment, as we talk soldier well-being and building trust within our organization and the profession as whole.